Welcome to Book Talk for Book Talk, a podcast where we deep dive into the writing of your favorite novels.
This season, we're exploring Sarah J. Maas's first installment in the Crescent City series. This is Jack.
And I'm Amy. This is part two of this week's episode.
The views expressed by the hosts are entirely their own and in no way represent the thoughts or intentions of the original author.
This podcast is a discussion, shared to spark thought and conversation on the characters and themes of this novel.
The interpretations presented in this podcast are just a few of the many possibilities. Listeners are encouraged to read along and share their own analysis of the text.
Though the hosts speak mostly within the constraints of this book, series and extended universe spoilers may be discussed with or without warning.
Explicit language, as well as themes of sex, violence, abuse, depression, self-harm, and death will recur throughout this podcast. Listener discretion is advised.
At this juncture, Bryce wants to shower. She just wants to be clean. And Hunt offers to get her food. This time, Bryce takes him up on it. And I think it's because it's an offer. It's not, he didn't order for her. He didn't make assumptions. He said, do you want food?
Yeah. Yep. It's done totally differently than how it was at the White Raven.
And what it does is it's building trust because he's not forcing anything on her and she has choice.
Mm-hmm.
She has choice to judge her current state and make a decision. And I love to see that mirror play out, that parallel play out for us.
Yeah. Now that my tummy doesn't hurt, a cheeseburger with cheese fries sounds delicious, but I'm not going to risk that. The way that Hunt describes Bryce eating the food, it's as if she rips her food apart like a lion, more fierce than a lion. And keeping in mind that female lions are usually the ones who bring the food to the alpha. And I don't think that it's necessarily a gender reversal, like now she's the male lion, because the reason why they do that is because the male lions are the protectors.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones to keep other predators, other competing lions away. And in the situation, Hunt is still the protector.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just the sign, a show of respect in this moment, for sure.
Just to continue on that, Hunt sees her as a lion, which is a predator, which mm-hmm. means he sees strength within her.
Yeah.
Which I don't think he would normally have seen before.
Yep.
I don't think he would have called her a lion. He might have called her a rat. I don't know. But not something as ferocious as a
rat. Yeah. No, I agree.
A pigeon. Like, I don't know.
Pigeons?
Squirrel?
Have a poor bad rap.
They're the rats of the sky.
We did that. They were bred to be human companions. And now we've just like, it's just, okay. If we were to, oh, this is my pigeon rant.
let me have this. Jack goes on a rant.
Let me have my pigeon rant. Imagine a species. Like, okay, imagine cats one day, Amy. As a community, we all said, cats are gross. I don't want anything to do with them. They are rats. They're basically big rats. That's what we did to pigeons. Justice for pigeons.
Okay.
That's why they can't make a nest worth shit. We'll talk about this after.
Okay. Before we wrap up chapter 27, Hunt goes into the guest bedroom. He looks around and he sees a picture of Bryce and Danica, and he notices that the leather jacket Bryce has been wearing is actually Danica's, and on the back of which says, through love, all is possible. And he views it differently. When they were at the meat market, he was like, ew, it's so cheesy, mm-hmm. it's stupid. But now he's like,
this was made from the ancient faith's language, and it's a saying, and it is revered, and blah, blah, blah.
He has more respect for it.
Yeah.
And just that little nugget shows the change in Hunt's perspective that we're going to continue to see evolve this novel.
Mm-hmm.
In chapter 28, Hunt wakes up and says, quote, he slept like the dead in the spare bedroom. And to me, that implies he felt safe. He didn't have to sleep mm-hmm. with one eye open. He didn't move around anytime he heard any little thing. He felt safe.
It's a good thread count, too, I bet.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah, it is.
He wakes up. He goes looking for Bryce, thinking she's already left him behind. Because, you know, Hunt is not Hunt unless he feels defensive sometimes.
Yeah.
And instead, we find that Juniper shows up to bring Bryce to food in the form of an apology. Just like Hunt did the day before, saying, I know what she likes to eat for lunch. Let me make an order for her. Juniper shows up. I know she likes chocolate croissants. I slapped her yesterday. Let me bring her a croissant.
Like, everyone's like, you're the alpha lion.
Like, yeah. They're all the lionesses being like, here you are. My offering.
Here's the food. She's the lion.
Yeah. I mean, could it be Juniper exerting power over Bryce? Could it be that Bryce is the alpha lion that everyone respects? I don't know. I feel conflicted about it, to be honest.
So I think you and I are coming from like the ACOTAR seasons where it was a lot of food is power, and food is still power. I don't want to take that away. Like, you see that a lot in every type of literature. But we're in a world where food is more readily available.
Yeah.
And it's more than just power now.
Yeah.
It can be viewed as bargaining chips. It can be viewed as like a bribe. Like, it's just, it's different than just power. But so, it is power. Just different types of power.
No, now I have a different, completely different thought. Remember how at Luna's temple, there was a room for stag sacrifices to Luna?
Mm-hmm.
Food, in a lot of religions, is an offering to worship.
Yep.
The
So now they're coming to worship Bryce?
So are they? Yeah. That's my new slant.
Well, you know,
if Bryce is Luna.
She, and that is my claim, or like representation of Luna.
From last week we discussed this.
Yep, yep.
That's,
I'm on board.
This is Juniper's offering on the shrine of Bryce.
And then watch me go Google how to start a cult so that people can bring me food. Juniper, and like most women that we've seen in this world, are able to turn the feminine into a weapon. And it's a small moment. I don't have too much to say, but she dismisses Hunt with a, quote, sweet smile. And she just tells him, like, privacy would be great. Like, she kicks him out, essentially. And
you have no rights if you're not sleeping with my friend, basically.
Yeah, like, she goes, looks at the bed, like, to say, like, I love that the moment where, like, she goes to the other side of the bed and then looks up at Hunt almost. I was like, what is she silently communicating? Is this bed dirty because of you?
Did you sleep here?
Yeah,
are you
allowed
to resume your position?
Yeah, right? Like, but there was definitely some accusation, because then he was like, it's not what it seems.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I do appreciate that the women in this world are using their feminine wilds as weapons.
Mm-hmm. So Hunt leaves to go make coffee to give the women some space. And he smiles to himself when he overhears Juniper call him gorgeous. So it's a title that she's giving him. And he likes this title. For some reason, this also makes him remember all the other titles he's been given, like the Umbra Mortis and the, quote, Knife of the Archangels, which I think this is the first time we've heard it.
It's just because he's a Taylor Swift fan and Gorgeous is his favorite song. Gorgeous.
Gorgeous. Totally.
I'm so sorry.
My flow is gone.
I'm so sorry.
Totally okay.
That joke was not worth it.
I'm sorry.
No, don't apologize. I ruined you.
No, it's okay. So Hunt, we're learning for the first time, is called the Knife of the Archangels. And it's very peculiar to me to be called that, because it's not like he uses knives. He mostly uses guns. I guess he could torture with knives. Yeah. But it just drives the point home to me that he is a weapon. He is a tool that is used. And everyone describes him as such. Like, that is his title. His title is the title of a tool. And Hunt doesn't like being used. Which is why being called gorgeous is so lovely, because he's not being used.
But if he was, it'd be in a way he'd approve.
Yeah, that's fair. But I say all this because we know Hunt doesn't like being used. He's been given names that imply he's being used. And there are going to be times when Bryce makes secret plans and doesn't loop him in, and he's going to feel used. And he gets mad at her. And that is justified.
Yeah.
And is not out of character. And I just want to bring that up here.
Absolutely. And it's also a great reminder at the contradictions. You know, I made a joke of like, he liked to be used in the other way. He wouldn't, you know, like I recognize that. But, you know, I think there's something about like wanting to feel like, I hate saying it this way, but like wanting to feel like a man, you know, you just want to like, sometimes you just really need to be checked out.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just need someone to shamelessly hit on you.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
And it shows the contradiction between Bryce and Hunt. Hunt is never gawked at. And if he is, then it immediately stops once they see the tattoos. Bryce, on the other hand, is checked out constantly. People are allowed to lust after her. Sex and desire for Hunt, it's shameful. It's his act and others' desire is shameful because he's not allowed to lust after other people. What would even happen? Slash, he's still hung up on Shahar. Slash, like in general, everything about desire just doesn't flow with him, right? But you still kind of want to hear it. And he's not allowed to participate in one of the most basic instincts of, I was going to say humans, but you know what I mean? Like just the most basic primal instinct that everyone has of like, I just want to check out a nice body. Bryce leaves the bedroom, goes into the kitchen and quote, each step had the pale pink lace of the nightgown's hem brushing against her upper thighs, tugging up slightly to reveal that thick, brutal scar on the left leg. His stomach twisted at the sight of what he'd done to her. Because he's already marred her. He's already damaged her. He doesn't get to admire her because he's hurt her.
Right. It's not she's broken goods. It's he's already broken her.
Yep.
Which is sad.
Yeah.
Because that speaks to his self-worth, which is zero.
Yeah. He's really good at hiding his lack of self-worth.
Mm-hmm.
What I appreciate is like it's not so like Asriel, like in your face.
Right.
I hate everything about myself. And you're right. Like, oh my God, fine. I'm still into it. But like, you know, but Hunt is really good at hiding these aspects about him. At this point, Bryce rants about alpha holes. Ugh. And I could quote the entire thing, but it would be super long, but it's glorious. It's basically SJM saying, hey guys, I've heard every complaint you've all made about all my other characters, and I'm going to make fun of it too. It's so meta.
It is so meta. And do we need to explain meta again?
It's being awkwardly self-aware of what's happening.
Right, right. So for the writing to be aware that it is writing, basically, that we see in the text, Bryce is talking about alpha holes, but what it really is SJM being like, yes, I know these things.
Yeah.
I know your conversations about this.
Yeah.
And it's just... we explain it better in a different episode. I can't remember.
So go listen to our entire archive.
Good luck finding it.
It also shows like her rant on these alpha holes shows how deep her own daddy issues go.
Mm-hmm.
From day one, we heard from Bryce, fuck you alpha holes. Like, I don't want anything to do with them. But it also shows that when she mates with Hunt, it's not going to look the way that we've seen it before. And we, Amy and I, actually talked to A Happy Hermit and A Court of Thorns and Roses, and go listen to that interview. This was after the interview where we were just chatting, and Lily made such a great point of, hey, she's not going to mate like the rest of them.
Mm-hmm.
She already said, I don't like this. I will not stand for this.
Yeah.
So, of course, it's not going to be what we see. SJM is literally having Bryce scream this at us.
Yeah. Yeah, that my romantic relationship will look nothing like any of the romantic relationships that have come before mine.
Yeah. Yeah. And because we all know SJM is referring to Throne of Glass and ACOTAR, right? Because that's like, you know, she's making fun of herself. There's this quote, the moment one of you mates, the others fall like dominoes too. And God helps when you start having babies. And I'm like, oh my God, Nesta and Kathleen?
Are they going to have a baby? Baba? But I love it. And I wonder if that means that, well, we think that there's at least one other set of mates in this series. But maybe not everybody has a happy ending, has mates in Crescent City the way that they do in other novels. Because there's a lot of other mates in the other series.
I know, right?
When Hunt becomes annoyed with Bryce's rant and the ongoing description of alpha holes, he steals her chocolate croissant.
God, no, no.
I think there should be laws against this type of thievery. I think capital punishment is a requirement.
I think it's fair. I think that in ACOTAR, we talked about Feyre's emotional support cookie. This is an emotional support croissant. And I support you entirely on this. And I understand this deeply. I did these notes last night when I was having a really bad tummy ache and you guys all went to Korean barbecue. And as I was like taking these notes, I wanted to cry. I was like, I want Korean barbecue. It was so sad. And there's a balance between sex and food here. Like Hunt is discussing sex. He's saying, I wouldn't sleep with you with a 10-foot pole. Like, you know,
liar.
Not that, I know, right? I'm not going to have your babies. And all the while he's eating her croissant. And I think it's arguably the sexiest of breads. Croissants, okay. Followed by focaccia and sourdough.
Okay.
But only some sourdoughs.
Okay.
So he fucks with that bread.
Yeah.
He fucks with Bryce.
Yep. It is a show of dominance almost, right? Because he's trying to cut her off. He's being an alpha hole, kind of. What is funny to me is that it also creates this weird sense of balance.
Mm-hmm.
He fed her last night, but he can also take away.
Like, I giveth, I taketh.
Really? But he taketh not what he giveth.
I taketh with Judith.
So there's some balance. I don't know if it's okay.
Well, it's how he's able to get her to comply, though.
Right.
Because, you know, he suggests at this point, like, Bryce, you're the alpha hole here. And, like, she is. And it makes sense because she wasn't able to be the alpha hole with Danica. And now I think she's coming more into her own personality.
Right.
But I personally don't agree with these methods. I would never agree with stealing someone croissants.
And eating it.
And eating it in front of them. Like, that's not allowed. But they were effective.
Yeah. And so what I think this is, it's what is called negative feedback in science. And it's not me telling you critical things about your writing. It is seeking balance. It's how thermostats work. It's how our bodies work in a lot of ways. And what it is, and I think about this a lot, thanks to my high school science class. I think in so many contexts of life, and I'm so sorry I'm bringing it up now. But what we're seeing is we have this really high positive intake. And to compensate with that, you have a really negative intake. And then because of that negative, you eventually find balance. And we're seeing that with Hunt and Bryce right now.
It's also known as one step forward, two steps back.
Right. But it's the positive feedback generates a negative feedback, which eventually brings everything to stasis what it is. Hunt and Bryce were really pissy and aggressive with each other at the White Raven. After the explosion, Hunt was extremely gentle. Bryce was extremely docile. And now we've reached this playful balance. It's a new status quo for them. And I think that's symbolized with the food.
Yeah, I agree. We're going into chapter 29, and Hunt is starting to be open to new perceptions of Bryce. In the previous chapter, he commented on how she spends an hour plus doing her makeup and her hair. But now he's like, oh my God, it was her armor the whole time. And everyone else in the audience is like, no shit, Sherlock. But it's great that he learns this. Quote, Bryce wore a little black dress today. Her makeup more subdued, heavier on the eyes, lighter on the lipstick. Armor, he realized. The clothes, the hair, the makeup, they were all like the leather, steel, and guns he donned every morning. So again, he's relating to her. But I want to go into what is Bryce protecting? What is she armoring herself? And that's the eyes. She has thicker eyeliner, lighter lipstick. And I think that there's a reason why she's trying to protect her eyes rather than her mouth, because she wants to throw people off by what they see in them. She doesn't want people to see sadness in her own eyes.
It's a great point.
Thank you. I do that a lot too, of like when I worked in a corporate environment and I went into the office all the time, if I was annoyed, oh my God, the way I would dress up, and I would wear my highest heels because I would tower all the guys.
Mm-hmm.
And now if my eyeliner is really thick, it's because I screwed up and I just keep going until they're even. So.
As Jack said, Hunt is relating to Bryce, and he even thinks, quote, the clothes, the hair, the makeup, they were like the leather and steel and guns he donned every morning. And I love that he's finally able to see that, that it's not, ugh, she wasted an hour in the bathroom putting herself together.
Yeah.
It's like cleaning a gun.
Right.
Or it's like putting the gun together.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's how we should all get ready in the morning. You're putting the gun together.
By doing your makeup?
Yeah.
That's right. You're preparing for battle.
You are the gun.
Bryce and Hunt head to the gallery because Bryce has to work, knowing eventually they're going to go to the Comitium to pick up some of Hunt's things. Hunt notices that Bryce is wearing an Arkesian charm. Quote, "A charm like that had to cost burning souls. It had to cost a fuck ton." Hunt thought about the heavy iron door to the archives. Perhaps it hadn't been put there to keep thieves out, but to keep things in. So from a writing perspective, it's so disconcerting from him to think about the amulet and then go immediately to the doors of the gallery. It's just, it's strange and it does not flow at all. But if we take a moment to think about it, Hunt is making a connection. He's making a connection between the Arkesian amulet and the heavy iron doors of the archives. The archives have become metaphor for the Arkesian amulet. And Hunt doesn't know how accurate this thought is at this moment. The amulet is not protecting Bryce outwardly, necessarily. It's protecting inwardly. And what we know now as readers of this book is that it's protecting the horn inside her.
I love it.
It's such a good little connection that Hunt makes, that SJM makes. And
well, and then to add to it, you talk about the archives being part of her inner sanctum. Like, is this the next level of sanctum, you know? Yeah, so it even just to double down on what you're saying is like even more related to her.
Yeah. It's great.
Again, coming back to her own daddy issues, these last few chapters, like, I don't know. I feel like Bryce is talking more about her hatred for the Autumn King in this section than we've seen before.
Yep.
And here, quote, "I think I hate him more than anyone else in Midgard, except Sabine." And I'm curious, I don't want to say why does she hate him, because we know why she hates him, but she really doesn't have interaction with him.
Right.
You can still hate him because, like, you know, he's done a lot of fucked up shit, but it just seems so visceral.
Because it's a child's hate.
Whoa.
He rejected her at the age of 13.
Yeah.
She was a child.
Yep.
She doesn't know him. Mm-hmm. She only knows this one persona of him that she's had interactions with. And so it's visceral because that's, as 13, you can only feel things viscerally. Like, you feel strongly or you don't.
Right.
And so I think that leaves room for her to come to understand him later on.
Yeah. It does feel like a buildup of hatred to one day be
dissipated.
Dissipated a little bit. Yeah. Because it is built.
Right. Now, I don't think Bryce is actually, she's talking about the Autumn King, but she's talking about her father because Hunt doesn't know the Autumn King is her father, right?
Yep.
And she mentions that her father and Sabine are the number one people on her shit list. She asks Hunt, who's your number one person on your shit list? Because that's a normal thing to ask. And so Hunt is honest. And because he's capable of answering her question, it strengthens their bond. Quote, Bryce eyed him. "You ever want to talk about it, Athalar? I'm here." She said it casually, but he could read the sincerity in her face. He nodded. Likewise. And just a few chapters before, Hunt was thinking how he wanted someone to talk to. And look, Bryce has offered it. It's a great moment. And I think it's significant that they are passing the heart gate at this moment when the offer comes up. The heart gate is not actually called the heart gate in this moment. It's called the old square gate because that's where it's located. But earlier in the novel, she calls it the heart gate. And this is also the same gate where Bryce calls Hunt, wants to tell him she loves him at the end of the novel. It's where Bryce makes the drop. It's where they're reunited. It's significant that this offer to talk about these deep things happens in the same location.
It is great. It is great.
Gives me goosebumps.
Yeah. Do you know who's on my shit list based off of the text I sent you this morning?
Harry Styles.
Yeah. I had a dream about him and he was not nice to me at all. So.
So he's on the shit list.
One day I'll recover. One day he'll recover. So Bryce and Hunt talk about the wishes that they made or would make when they're at this gate. And a new dynamic is coming in. Hunt asks what Bryce wished for, and she says bigger boobs. And he is, for the first time, really, recognizes her body to her face and says that it paid off, which, like, he hasn't really done that of, like, you have boobs, is what he said.
And and they are, in fact, big.
Big. Ta-da. Like, that's his.
But he doesn't attach preference to them.
No, not yet. But like, but he's never done even that yet, right? So I'm right. Just, you know, we're easing into this.
Right, exactly.
Hunt then thinks about the wishes that he would make. And it's his mom being alive, the archangels and Asteri dying, they're not being slaves, bringing down the whole system, right? You know, general peace and love. But instead he says, quote, since I'm perfectly happy with the size of my assets, I'd wish for you to stop being such a pain in my ass. Now, we're coming back to sex as a distraction again. We're seeing this pretty quickly after the last time. And it's covering up other emotions. But at the same time, like, if you're using sex as a distraction, sex is now on the table.
Yep.
The sex door has been open.
It sure has. And Bryce doesn't seem mad about it.
No.
Where she probably would have been a day or two ago.
Yeah. We support it. Bryce supports it. And yet we don't get sex in this book.
I was just about to say sex for everyone, but that's not true.
Sex for no one.
Yay.
Oh.
During season 3 of our podcast, when we analyzed A Court of Wings and Ruin, I argued that Sun becomes associated with mates. And I want to say that SJM may be repeating that pattern here. When Bryce and Hunt are talking, and this is, mind you, from Hunt's perspective, he thinks, quote, Bryce grinned, and damn if that morning sun didn't finally make an appearance at the side of it.
It's so cute.
Cute. And why does the sun make an appearance? Because they're mates.
Yep.
And he's happy that she's happy.
Yep.
Ugh, love it.
It's giving me cute aggression.
So I have cute aggression. I'm clenching my thighs right now.
Let me peek over. I'm like, yeah, she is. All right.
We get to the gallery library and Rune comes in because Bryce said, fine, if you give me what I want, you can come to the library. Last week, I argued that when this happened with Hunt, Bryce and Hunt's relationship evolved. Will we see the same with Rune and Bryce? Well, here's what I noticed during the scene. I definitely saw Rune and Hunt start to see similarities in each other. Rune observes, quote, Hunt grumbled, but Rune noted the impressed gleam in his eyes at Bryce's sleuthing. Additionally, quote, Rune rolled his eyes, surprised to find Athalar doing the same. I want to suggest that by coming into the library, we're actually going to also see a change in Rune and Hunt's behavior and their relationship. And I want to say I feel queer vibes here. And I feel it. Even more in Sky and Breath, but
I don't, but I'm ready to.
I will. Mean, I'm just strong, saying I want to. It's not queer vibes, but in the context of this love triangle between the three of them, I could totally see Rune and Hunt together.
I'm willing to see any of them together, except for Rune and Bryce, because it's wrong, I know. Hunt and Rune, I'm into all of it.
Why not? We also see movement in Rune and Bryce's relationship, although I would say they're more baby steps. Rune comments at one point how Bryce has always had good taste in music when he recognizes the band that she puts on the speakers. And Bryce is affected by that. She's like, oh, thanks.
When it was like described as a folk album, I was like, Evermore.
Rune also remembers Bryce's old email. And though she takes a minute, Bryce does admit that the email is the same. Later in the chapter also, right at the very end, Rune tells Bryce that her power levels never mattered to him. And I think Bryce is receptive to all of this. She tries so hard to not engage, but she just can't help herself at the end. She's like, okay.
Well, I mean, it's kind of like, oh, you remembered?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It means a lot when a man remembers anything about you.
Right? I mean, it's just...
Why are we willing to accept so little from them?
You remembered my email? Woo! family reunion. But I mean, it's true though, but it's just that, like, and again, this is why we're getting relationship vibes, because that's like kind of a trope you'd see, yep. you know, of old lovers coming back together. You remembered? Of course I remembered. But, you know, it's sweet. It is very, very sweet.
Yeah. And let's also talk about, is this sweet? I don't know. Rune gets a little bit jealous at the end of the chapter and thinks, quote, nothing good could come of it. Bryce and Athel are working together, living together. I feel just like all the other stuff, SJM is really playing up this love triangle aspect, and it's cute and possessive on Rune's part, and I'm so glad he doesn't say anything. Yeah. Otherwise, I would sock him in the face. But, oh man, this relationship dynamic.
Well, it almost kind of gives the, like, he's getting his turn.
Yeah, what I about
my
me?
Turn?
I want to play with my sister.
Right? You know, it kind of gives me, like, they're all little chibis.
Yeah.
And
reminds me of when I was 2 and my brother was 1, and I have this home video of me chasing him. My prince won't dance with me.
Yeah. Bryce didn't like Hunt to begin with.
Yep.
He was on the same playing field as Rune.
Yep.
Bryce and Hunt are starting to get along, and Rune is like, wait a minute.
I'm your brother.
Yeah, what's wrong with me?
Yeah, yeah. No, that's a great point.
Yeah. So when Rune's looking for a book, he finds the book Great Romances of the Fae, and Bryce says, quote, you sure that Starborn power isn't for finding smut? All right. I am excited to announce, ladies, and maybe the few gentlemen who listen, I am, in fact, Starborn. If that is what the powers entail.
I can find smut.
I mean, I think I'm Starborn. I think that's a... Someone get me a Starburst.
Okay.
When I first, like, was reading all of it the first time, I was like, Starburst. Starborn.
No.
Starburst?
No.
I just want to eat a Starburst while reading about Starborns.
No.
Okay.
But good for you. You do that.
We have different paths.
We do. There is also one point at the end where Bryce thinks, quote, with lines like that, Athelar was in danger of becoming one of her favorite people. And I love that she's acknowledging that they do have the same sense of humor, and she likes it.
She likes it.
She likes it.
Chapter 30 begins, and Bryce and Hunt head off to where Hunt works. And I just want to start off by saying, like, Bryce belongs everywhere she goes. Quote, she changed into red suede flats and a button-up white blouse tucked into tight jeans and tied her silken mass of hair into a high ponytail, swaying easily with every step she took, matching Hunt stride for stride. Her ponytail is sassy. Her stride is matching Hunt's. Like, Bryce doesn't walk. She owns. Like, every step she takes, she owns. She is like, I belong here. No one needs to question. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to skip a little bit. A few pages ahead real fast, but, you know, I just want to make my point. When they're eventually in the Comitium and Bryce and Hunt get out of the elevator, mm-hmm. quote, she stepped into the simple hallway and he followed her, realizing as she paused that he knew where they were going and she only faked it.
I love that moment.
Yeah.
Because it's subtle. But I think Hunt is kind of marveling at her. Like, even he was fooled by yes. her confidence.
Like, he's like, okay, well, after you, what the hell?
Like, this is my place, not your place.
You know where we're going.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just, I love that power of hers mm-hmm. to just be like, I belong here.
Yeah.
I know what I'm doing, even though she has no clue.
No one needs to know that part.
Exactly. No one needs to know. Now, we all know I'm obsessed with numbers, so let me talk about numbers. We've seen thus far, we're 300 pages in, 7 is everywhere.
Yep.
But so is the number 5. 5 keeps showing up. I want to suggest that while there is power in the number 7, the number 5 illustrates the natural order of things.
Okay.
There are 5 gods.
In this world.
In this world.
Yeah.
Cathona, Erd, Ogenis, Solus, Luna.
Oh my god, you memorized them.
I do.
Wow.
There are 5 towers of the Comitium. There's 1 elevator for each of those towers. There's 5 members of the Triarii. Mm-hmm. Hunt, Isaiah, Naomi, Justinian, Victoria. I think that the angels naturally align with this number 5. We can see it in the Comitium. We can see it in the Triarii. But I think the Asteri have taken over. And so now everything is the number seven. The focus is the number seven. I just want to point that out because I'm curious to see how the number five comes into play as we progress throughout this series.
I love that. Hunt is annoyed when Bryce flirts with a legionary and when the legionary responds to her flirting. Other than the initial bit of jealousy, you know, where it's like, what are you doing? At one point, he even says, like, maybe you shouldn't talk to a guy who just checks out your ass before even saying anything to you. And it's like, what were you doing, Hunt?
Yeah, exactly.
What were you doing? Other than that, I do want to go back to my thoughts that he struggles with this freedom to admire. Mm-hmm. And it's once again, there's someone else who has the freedom to admire because Hunt is the notorious one. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, other people have that liberty. And this random angel is able to look, flirt, and admire in a way that Hunt feels like he can't, even though, because every time that he's like been checking her out, she's been like passed out on a bed, or when she was like laying in the hallway, he could see up her skirt.
Yeah.
And it's like, he admits he's feeling a little creepy about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it is.
It is. Yeah.
It's a little, especially when she was like, you know, like she just got exploded. Yeah. and now she's in the hallway about like trying to stay conscious and you can see her underwear. But I'm going to jump a few pages to, you know, double down on this theory that Hunt, not even a theory, I think it's proven, Hunt hates himself. Hunt says, quote, I was born a bastard. My mother had no money and no distinguished bloodline that might have made up for it. I don't exactly have females lining up for me, despite this face of mine. His laugh was bitter. I had someone once who didn't care about the status, but it didn't end well. Hunt has some intense self-hatred. Like, his loyalty to Shahar has to do with, like, she didn't care about his status. And, like, who's the first person that hasn't cared since then? Bryce?
It's not only self-hatred, and this is where I find Hunt and Cassian to be very similar. It's he's not good enough, right? So Shahar was previously into him, quote-unquote. Whether or not that's true is to be debated.
Yeah.
But he wasn't good enough to keep her alive.
Yeah.
Therefore, he is not good enough to be with anyone.
Yeah.
Because there's no guarantee he can keep them alive.
Yeah.
And it's not only self-hatred that he's inadequate. It's also, well, I don't think anyone's capable of viewing any value in me because I have no value to give.
Yeah.
Poor Hunt. Such mommy issues.
So many.
But I do. My heart hurts for him. However, he does recognize, even though he doesn't see his value as someone to be loved, as someone to be cherished, he does recognize his power and how that alienates him from others. He thinks that everyone at the Comitium, quote, would be more comfortable getting into an elevator with a starved tiger. What does that say about Hunt and his view of himself?
That he is also a kitty and she is a lion.
That's right. That's right. Or that he's more powerful than a starved tiger. He's scary than a starved tiger. He would eat everybody up faster than a starved tiger.
Those two.
But he's also a cat.
Yeah.
Love it. Hunt, in a flashback, recalls that he and Bryce went to pick up a new phone for Bryce prior to going to the Comitium. And during that time, Bryce is messing with Hunt's phone and realizes there's only 36 photos on his phone. Let me talk about angel numbers again, because I have to. And the number 36. And I take this from the internet, so
this is, at this point, just fun.
It's just fun.
Like, it's a bit.
Yeah. I have no stock in this. I put no value into this. It's just entertaining.
Yeah.
This is purely for entertainment. Quote, angel number 36 twin flame means that you might meet your twin flame soon. It might be a possibility that your twin flame is already in your life. The 36 angel number gives you the ability to recognize your twin flame. Therefore, you can start your relationship with your twin flame. Like, it's so
Wasn't last week's episode also a twin flame reference?
Yeah, it was. I mean, I think it's like any tarot reading, you can apply it to like love, finances, work, etc. Like, this is the, what does 36 mean with regard to your twin flame is what I'm reading.
Okay.
So I bring this up because it's funny, but this moment is significant because this is starting a series of use of the cell phone, taking photos, and an important marker in Bryce and Hunt's relationship.
Mm-hmm.
They are at a point where they're willing to feel connected enough to start taking photos of each other. And that is going to document the entire progression of their relationship from here on out.
Yeah.
And it's just like something we said in episode one, SJM doesn't have cell phones just for the sake of having cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
It actually plays an important role in the plot and in the relationship development. And I love the way she uses it.
Absolutely. It's so clever. It's such a, I think, relatable way, mm-hmm. too, for where it's like, you know, we can go and do that too.
Yeah.
But Hunt asks, like, what would he take a photo of, right? Like, mm-hmm. he's so flabbergasted by Bryce's question. And she says, oh, I don't know, of life, a pretty flower or a good meal or something. His response, what's the point?
Yeah.
And it goes back to, like, my earlier comment that life is about blips,
mm-hmm.
where life is about, like, hey, I had a really good brunch today with my friend.
Mm-hmm.
The food was really good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that we, in our world, make fun of, right? Like when you see the people who are taking a photo or that saying, you know, the camera eats before me, you know, mm-hmm, like these types mm-hmm. of things. And sure, it might get too far, but I think that what SJM just did here, it's freeing.
Yeah.
In a way, and removing, I'm going to say it, like a certain level of sexism.
Yeah.
Of like, you know, women, because that's like women, you know, we kind of have that stereotype of like taking photos of really pretty things. It's like, well, let me. This yeah. is what life is.
Yeah.
Blips.
Well, because what our memories are just made of like, especially our memories, Jack. Oh, remember that really awesome steak we ate in France?
Oh, my God. Yeah, actually, you brought me back to that. Yeah.
Remember
yeah,
the gratin we ate by the river in Paris?
And I didn't take a photo of that one.
I didn't. I'm so mad.
Me too. We were so like excited. But like food especially, like great memories.
Yeah.
And just like, you can show me a photo of something like that and immediately I am back in Paris mm-hmm. with you,
mm-hmm.
both of us staring at this meat sizzling over a hot stone and being like, how are we going to possibly eat this entire thing? And somehow we do, because we're heroes.
I know. Like an entire kilogram of steak.
How many times have you and I been to restaurants where they've been like, this is more than two people can eat? And we're like,
bet. Double down.
Yeah, we're going to finish this. The answer to that, people, is a lot.
Too many times.
Where the waiters had to warn us.
Like, this is not for two people. This is for four or six. Even my girlfriend and I over the holidays were like, you know what? Let's start a couples journal, but it's our food journal. Because
yes.
Because we have so much joy about food.
Yeah.
And that's, when we travel, we think about food. When we're at home, we think about food.
It's like, just like food is such a great way of connecting
yeah.
with people. And, you know, like I'm about to go to Chile. I'm excited to go eat all the food. And
so jealous.
I am the amount of photos I'm going to send of you of like,
look at this.
Look at this one. Look at this one.
Look at how much mayonnaise I'm putting on this.
So much Chilean mayonnaise. You don't even know. Amy does.
I do.
Listeners don't.
At this point, we enter Hunt's bedroom in the Comitium, and it looks like it could be Hunt's inner sanctum. But as Jack said earlier, there's nothing on the walls. He's not willing to personalize anything because it's just more crap he has to take with him when he moves on. So I don't think it's really truly his inner sanctum. I think it's the first layer, just like the library at the gallery is Bryce's first layer into her psyche.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, Micah can trade me whenever he wants. It's asking for bad luck to put down roots like that. So,
yeah,
just like Jack was saying earlier. Despite this, Bryce asks a lot of questions and Hunt really doesn't hesitate to answer. She's even brave enough to ask some really hard questions. And I think that just proves the point that this is like we're opening up into Hunt. We're getting one layer deeper, like just subdermal now. Up until this point, it's really been Hunt seeing what he has in common with Bryce. I think this is the moment we see Bryce realize she has something in common with Hunt.
Good freaking point.
Bryce asks why Hunt is not in charge of the 33rd. And Hunt says, quote, because I piss off too many people and don't give a shit that I do. Bryce responds, we have something in common after all, Athalar. And I love it because she sees a rebelliousness in him in this man who's supposed to be a law keeper for the Archangel, the governor. And she's connected to it because she is also rebellious. And I think for both of them, rebellion is the only way to feel power against those who control them.
Yeah. She asks him so many questions here. Mm-hmm. Questions that are hard hitting.
Very.
What is it about the space that gives her permission in her mind where she feels safer to do this? Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And I don't know if I have an answer to that. It's not what I wrote in my notes. All I wrote in my notes was discuss. But it did strike me where she was asking those heavy hitting questions. Like, what would you do with your freedom? Do you mm-hmm. regret having done this? Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering how much of it is because they're in his inner sanctum.
Yeah.
That she feels like she gets to do this, or seeing how little he has there sobers her.
Yeah.
In a way where it's like she just like learned he is a man who has 36 photos of various body parts.
Yeah.
He is a man who doesn't like, you know, he's a machine yeah. in so many ways.
Yeah.
That she's disarmed by this and is now asking him questions. But something's like loosened her lips.
Well, think about what's happened in the last 24 hours mm-hmm. between the two of them.
A lot.
Hunt has carried her away from danger.
Yep.
He's patched up her shredded knees.
Yep.
He's brought her food.
Yep.
He's eaten her food from her hands. Like, he's taken it from her.
I mean, the day before she saw the bodies and was traumatized. So if you want to even right. go. Yeah. Yeah.
Even that. He has spent even more time in the library in addition to being in her apartment for yep. the first time. Yep. I guess this is 48 hours maybe by this point. But he's also allowed her to mess with his phone.
Yeah.
He's allowed her to come into his bedroom at the Comitium, which she's probably never been in before.
Yep.
So it feels like, I don't know if she feels like she has permission. I think she's testing a boundary.
Yeah, she's testing a boundary, and she's testing a boundary in a tight room.
Very tight.
In a small room. Let's test this tiger in mm-hmm. a small-ass room.
She's not afraid of him.
No, she's not.
Because what's the worst that can happen? I don't want to talk about that.
Right?
Okay.
Oh, that's so brave.
It is.
Right? Like, just to have that attitude. Like, what? That's what my therapist says all the time. What? And what if the answer is, and what if? So yeah. What if that happens?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think what she's also noticed is this give and take, because mm-hmm. Hunt is willing to be vulnerable when Bryce has been willing to be vulnerable.
Yep.
And she's been vulnerable a lot lately.
Yeah.
So I think she's willing to see, like, hey, I've been honest about some things. Are you willing to be honest? It's another test.
From an SJM point of view, it's also, like, super maniacal as a writer.
Oh, yeah.
Because you just made him so vulnerable, mm-hmm. open up in a way that he hasn't maybe ever before. And who's he going to run into now?
The number one shit list person.
Yeah. Like, right? It goes so, like, I'm going to ask you all these questions. You're going to bleed your soul to me. Okay, are you ready?
Ready. The person you hate the most.
Woo.
What's curious is that Bryce's stomach flips when they get in the elevator to go down.
Yeah.
And it flips again right before the elevators open up yeah. and they see Sandriel. And I wonder if even Bryce senses that coming moment. I couldn't tell.
Well, isn't Micah with her?
Yeah.
Micah's the one who's summoning the demon that hunts for the horn.
So, like, her radar is going off?
Her horndar. That did not come out the way I wanted it to.
No.
I did not do that one on purpose.
And that wraps up chapter 30. And now we go to our breadcrumbs.
This episode has been brought to you by Brettnick Breadcrumbs now. Should have been brought to us by Tums. That thing saved me.
Now, these are the non-multiverse related breadcrumbs. Mm-hmm. We'll go into the multiverse related breadcrumbs later. In chapter 26, quote, all signs point to the human rebels. They left the calling card on the crate, their own logo. Next to the logo on the crate was a branded image. My team and your team thought it was a warped C for Crescent City, but it could also be depicting a curved horn. And also, in my mind, I'm like, come on, this is so lame. This is too lame to be real. Like, put your heads together, think about it critically. It's not real. It was planted. But okay.
In chapter 26, quote, Danica had been unnerved by Briggs' fanaticism towards the human cause and had rarely wanted to talk about him. Or maybe she didn't want to talk about him because she understood him.
Yeah, maybe she was doing shady shit.
Yeah.
Still in chapter 26, Rune, after asking Bryce if he can check out the gallery library, quote, I've been through the Fae archives twice, and I've just kept thinking about the library. So maybe there's something there. Or, you know, maybe Bryce is there with the horn.
Chapter 26, Rune had truly worried about its meaning once, the Oracle's prophecy for his future. The day he learned he had a little sister, he thought it might foretell an untimely death for her, but his fears had been assuaged by the fact that she was not and would never be formally recognized as part of the royal bloodline. Ironically, she will in fact be recognized. And I'm sure we'll know a lot more come Crescent City 3. Can't wait for that.
Yep. In chapter 27, quote, when Danica died, a light went out at me. Her starborn light went out in her.
Oh. Oh.
Because she says a light went out at me. It's just another clue that she's starborn because everything she associates with is light.
Yeah, I'm like, well, her light didn't go out.
It did not go out, but she locks it away.
Yes. Chapter 27, Hunt, when describing his bargain with Micah. Quote, horror crept into Bryce's eyes, and he scrambled for a way to get rid of it, unsure why. Because the knights. Also, and, like, horror at Micah, not...
Well, no, but he just doesn't want
her Bryce upset, but, to like, be upset. Yeah. Understandable.
In chapter 29, when Bryce makes a joke about her boobs, quote, a laugh burst out of Hunt, chasing away any lingering shadows that talk of Sandriel had dragged up. Because Bryce is a source of light, a.k.a. Starborn, for Hunt.
Chapter 29, when Bryce asked Hunt what wish he would make if it could come true, quote, for his mother to be alive and safe and happy, for Sandriel and Micah and all the archangels and Asteri to be dead, for his bargain with Micah to be over and the halo and slave tattoos removed, for the rigid hierarchies of the Malakim to come crashing down. So, like, the middle 50% comes true in this novel. Like, what are the chances everything else comes true by Crescent City 3? Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. Still in chapter 29, quote, Rune scanned the library shelves, waiting to feel a tug toward anything beyond his sister, who'd spoken more to him in the last few days than she had in 9 years. Rune is drawn to his sister because she has the horn and she is stubborn.
Right, right. Chapter 29, quote, Connor had let Bryce take care of him, his eyes near glowing, and she'd known it was time. Ethan tells Bryce later that everyone viewed Bryce as Connor's mate. But while Connor might have seen Bryce as his mate, don't think Bryce saw him as her mate. Like, that's reserved for Hunt. Like, it's so again, it's such an assumed thing.
It is. So I wrote that because his eyes are near glowing and Bryce's eyes glow when she's with Hunt.
Yeah.
Which is a sign of them being mates. And so what if Connor's mate was Bryce, but Bryce was not Connor's mate? Does that make sense?
I think the near glowing is the fact that he was never going to, like, they were never going to be mates. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think he just wanted it badly.
So bad. Yeah. Still in chapter 29, Bryce asks Rune, quote, no mind reading for you? Rune says, it's mind speaking, and it has nothing to do with the Starborn stuff or this case. He evaded the question because he can mind speak. Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. Chapter 29. Just want to note that the mystics get mentioned and Hunt says, quote, the mystics are some dark and fucked up shit, which is what we get to see in Sky and Breath.
I love how she just plants little things that are going to come back.
Yeah.
Still in chapter 29, Bryce is teasing Lahaba about being in love with both Hunt and Rune. Quote, considering how terrible they are at sharing, I don't think it will end well for any of you. When you think about the context of Sky and Breath, that's a really painful statement to read.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. Lahaba says, quote, it's nice to have company down here. Something in Bryce's chest wrenched. Like, it's because you're going to die.
So sad. Last of all, in chapter 30, Hunt says about Micah dying, quote, our deed of ownership passes on to whoever replaces him. If he doesn't have anyone listed, the assets get divided among the other archangels, which is exactly what happens. So now we're going to move into multiverse breadcrumbs, of which there are few. So we're going to start in chapter 29. Quote, Queen Thea was also starborn, and her daughter, Helena, possessed the same power. Thea had a younger daughter with the same gift, but only Lady Helena gets mentioned. Night-haired Helena, from whose golden skin poured starlight and shadows. It seems like Peleus was one of several Fae back then with the starborn power. Rune We discussed this in our episode with Lily and Rosie. Rune could be descended from Helena, while Rhys could be descended from the younger sister, who I assume stayed in Prithian, since she does not get named anywhere. They're both night-haired and golden-skinned, and have starborn powers. Also, if Peleus is also starborn, then maybe Bryce's starborn powers come from him, and I vaguely remember descriptions of his powers matching her powers. Oh. So, just putting that out there.
Yeah. It's the way I had to write that down, like a history lesson. Like, my notes were totally different than I normally take notes, because I was like, I must just remember basic history lessons. Also, in chapter 29, quote, he claimed our ancestors, so this is Rune talking about his dad, he claimed our ancestors could burn entire forests to ash with half a thought. It just makes me think of Eris when he was lighting the fire, ice on fire and stuff, and I'm just like, God.
That's a great point.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's, Bryceism of the week. You belong exactly where you are, so walk like you do.
Yeah, own the room.
Own the room.
Even if you don't.
Was it a mistake to be in that room? Sure.
Act like you belong there? Absolutely.
100%. All right, Amy, got a question for you.
Yeah.
Who is being honest and to what degree?
So I do think that we are seeing Bryce and Hunt willing to be honest if the other asks the right question.
Mm-hmm.
Why does this remind me? Oh, this reminds me of Iron Flame. Because it's like, well, if you ask the right question, I will give you an honest answer.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening right now.
Uh-huh.
It is very much like Feyre and Rhys in Mist and Fury. It's the quid pro quo.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are you thinking right now? A thought for a thought. And it's the beginning of the relationship. It's a marker of willingness to trust each other and to open up to each other. It doesn't mean that they've fully developed that relationship. So are they willing to be honest? Yes, in the right circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's the right conditions for a relationship to continue to grow.
What I love about this dynamic, because you mentioned Fourth Wing and ACOTAR, and I see those similarities, but what makes me love this dynamic is that the questions that are being asked are being valued.
Yeah.
Because other series are very much like, well, if you want to know, you should just ask me.
Right.
And this is so, not that there's anything wrong with that series. It's just like, you know, men,
it's
right?
It's a different dynamic.
But it's also very much a, like, Bryce asks a question and just asking that question, or even Hunt, it's showing a vulnerability of, I've thought of you in this way.
Yeah.
So not only is the askee opening up, but the asker is also opening up by even showing that you care, that they care on some level, that they want to know, that they've thought about this, about that person.
Yeah. And it's not superficial questions. Mm-hmm. They are really deep questions. It reminds me of the first person I ever went on a date with. The first date, we were talking about how he played basketball in high school and how he didn't anymore because we were in college. And I was like, well, do you regret not playing basketball anymore?
Yeah.
And he just kind of looked at me like, what?
Yeah.
Like, you're asking me that question right now? And I think about that a lot because people are not willing to ask deep questions.
Yeah.
That kind of get at the heart of, that's a question that a therapist would ask, right? But
it's a valid question and a valid thing to be curious of.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't be shamed for being curious and engaged with their story.
Right.
Because that's what it is. Like, he's telling you about, in this case, like, your date was telling you about his life. And then in other instances, like, you know, around when someone's at, like, they're talking and you engage with them and you're taking it to that next level, it's even more like, hey, I not only listen to you, I want to dive in deeper.
Yeah.
Of everything. Now, both of them are holding back, Bryce and Hunt. Mm-hmm. They're holding, you know, Bryce hasn't admitted about her father. Hunt hasn't said anything about Shahar. Like, there's a lot of things that they're holding back because, of course, they will.
Right, you know, right. It's still early.
Early days. But I love this dynamic more than any of the other dynamics I've seen in SJM because of there's value in the question and value in the answer.
And value in the process.
Yeah.
Of opening up to each other.
Yeah, we're like in page 300.
Yeah.
And something.
Slow burn.
We are here and they're just now asking, like, being nice to each other, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, it is a slow burn. I appreciate the slow burn. And it is, yeah, I'm really loving this book.
Yeah, and I like that it's not like, even though there was an attraction to start with, real life circumstances prevented a mating bond from clicking in place and being like, oh, I love this person.
Right?
Yeah. Right. I think you said this last week. They're having to really work for the relationship.
Yep.
And the connection. And I really appreciate that about this book.
Yeah. Good job, SJM.
Good job.
You should write another.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Book Talk for Book Talk. We encourage you to rate and subscribe to our show on your preferred podcast listening platform. Next week, we will be exploring chapters 31 through 37 of A House of Earth and Blood.
We would love to hear your thoughts based on today's conversation. You can submit your comments to our forum at booktalkforbooktalk.com for a chance to have your feedback discussed during a future mini episode.
If you are enjoying the podcast, please visit our website, booktalkforbooktalk.com, to view our latest merch and learn about supporting the show through Patreon, Ko-Fi, or Venmo. You can also follow us on TikTok or Instagram at the handle, booktalkforbooktalk. Bye!